The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
Welcome to My Two Cents. My name is Marianne Stanley, and I invite you to look at some of today's most pressing issues through an entirely different lens than that used by the corporate-owned media. Our focus will be on old-time journalism. In other words, on getting to the truth by referencing facts and sources. Stay tuned and see if you've had a hunger that nothing else could satisfy. Until now, that is. Hi. And welcome to My Two Cents. This is Marianne Stanley, and today we're going to be talking about peace. Not in the passive sense of that just means we're not fighting a war, but peace in the active sense of making something phenomenal happen that we haven't really had a chance to try before. You'll hear, I know you've heard this before, is there'll never be peace. There can never be peace. There's always war fighting somewhere in this world. And we've heard this so often that we've come to believe it, which it is not. It's not a truth. You have to think in terms of if it's so natural to be at war for man, that man is naturally violent. Why does violence create post-traumatic stress disorder in returning soldiers and sailors and airmen? Why would they not come home feeling just dandy after going off to war? If violence is our nature, why is the natural instinct to cover our heads and duck if somebody takes a swing at us, somebody takes a swing, or somebody pulls out a gun and points it at us? Why do we run away if given the chance, if somebody is threatening us? If we're naturally violent, wouldn't we welcome a one-on-one confrontation? If we're naturally violent, why is it that we're not creating mayhem everywhere we go all the time? It's not that peace, then, is impossible. It's not that we're naturally violent. The only way you can get people, actually, to be violent is to, in one of two ways, to teach them only violence by abusing them horribly, being violent with them, and distorting their normal personalities from a young age. Or you teach them to kill and to be violent. It's in their training when they go to the military, and they're taught not to turn away from a target, but to recognize a man-shaped target and to aim for a certain part with their gun or their rifle. They're also taught concurrently with this, not only in how to kill, but they're also taught why to kill, in the sense that their fears, the basic human need to protect those we love, comes into play. So no military would have a standing army or would have any means to go to war without willing soldiers to fight that war. And how do they get those willing soldiers to fight that war? They put in them the kinds of reasons that would make a person kill. If someone, for instance, came up to you and said, I'm going to kill your child, I'm going to kill your parent, I'm going to kill your spouse, I'm going to kill you, most people will fight back to protect the life of themselves, but more importantly, of those they love. There have even been instances of people putting their life on the line to save their pet dog. So we will fight and fight back to protect those we love. The military knows this, and that's why they talk about a band of brothers. These are your family. This is your squad. These are your people. From now on, you're going to protect the guy or the woman on your right or your left. And they create the sense of camaraderie, this tight, cohesive union, so that you actually get the sense that it is family, thus you must protect them at all costs, even at the cost of your own life. They also have clever psychological ways that makes it possible for us to kill. It's very, very difficult. Why do you think that they blindfold people who are about to be executed by our firing squad or put in the electric chair? Why are they blindfolded? Is that going to change the outcome? It's not for the person that's about to be executed. It's for the executioner, because human beings have a very difficult time in their natural state killing someone when they can look into their eyes and see and recognize in themselves that other person. The other person reflects humanity to them, and they just can't pull that trigger, flip that switch. They can't do it. So they also have to create a psychological sense of a need to kill that person. And they do this in a number of ways. One way is just in dehumanizing them. That's why you always hear these derogatory names given to whoever the, quote, other is at the time, the bad person of the time, the day, the enemy of the day, like the flavor of the day. You've got the enemy of the day. Right now it could be the Afghanis, it could be Al-Qaeda, it can be the Iraqis, it can be, it's whoever we decide we have to kill for whatever reason. And they're given names. In Vietnam, it was gooks. You know, we have names for the Japanese. We have names for the Russians or the Germans. Why? Because it dehumanizes them. It makes them someone less than us. So we don't feel so bad. Just like if you catch and scale a fish, you don't say, oh, gee, you know, that must feel really bad. He's dehumanized. You don't care about the fish. You don't even see it as a sentient being. Well, we do that to people too. The powers that be, the armies, the military, tries to create that space between you and that person. So they either have to be a danger to you, in which case you will kill out of necessity, or they're not quite human. So you're able to kill them without feeling guilty. You saw the pictures that came back at the time from Iraq of the horrible things that were being done there to some of the prisoners. And the only way this can be done is if you do a thorough job of dehumanizing somebody, giving them a label that makes them a, quote, not you person, rather than someone just like you with a family, with loves and pain and needs, the same as you and I. That's the big message, by the way, of our time. Our big message today is they are us. We are each other. We are interconnected. You can't do things to each other without harming yourself as well. And I think we're beginning to see this more and more. We have a distaste, obviously, for war, or you wouldn't have the majority of us calling for an end to Iraq and Afghanistan, Pakistan, and wanting to call home all the troops over there who are basically ignored. We go about our daily business without even worrying about it, while their lives are on the line, their mental health is on the line every single day they're there. Used to be the military would never, ever, ever deploy people more than once to a location. And these guys are going back and back and back and back. And they come home fragmented people. They can never function normally again. And we allow it. So, you know, my challenge is let's get all these supposed pro-lifers and let's have them stand up for these people who have been born into this world and loved into adulthood or near adulthood, and who need to have a whole mind to function so that they can hold a job, they can love their spouse, raise their children, they can have a future instead of what we've got now, which is a bunch of people who have, they don't belong anywhere anymore. They come back in pieces, either literally or figuratively. It's not acceptable. It's certainly not necessary. And peace needs to become a way of life for all of us. It's the natural way. There are only 2% of people in the military who are not traumatized if they have been locked into combat for weeks on end. And those are people who, when diagnosed, are the people that we now call psychopaths or sociopaths. And they enjoy killing and they enjoy hurting people for whatever reason, whether it's from their own early traumas or some other problem. That, you know, they're the only ones. Other people come back severely damaged. That in and of itself should tell us that by nature, we don't want to kill other people. We don't want wars. We can and we want to live peaceably next to each other. The challenge of our time is to create the structures that will support this, to yank the money back from the government that's taking more than half of our taxes to keep the military machinery running, and that the Republican President Dwight Eisenhower in 1953 warned us about, saying, beware the military-industrial complex. That's something we need to stay very alert and aware in order to prevent it from occurring, because once it does, we're all toast. And I think we're seeing that now. Everybody is dragging along behind these giant contractors and corporations and the military that uses their services, while the people in our country don't have enough to eat, don't have homes of their own, can't get jobs, and are suffering every single day of their lives. We can do better. We can provide for all of us. It's about time. This has been Mary Ann Stanley at My Two Cents. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you'll be back some other day. And I invite you to send your questions or comments to shout@theflypod.com. That's shout@theflypod.com. I'll be looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you. So that's it for today's show. Thank you for listening. Your feedback is always welcome. Just email us at shout@theflypod.com. Until next time, this has been My Two Cents with Mary Ann Stanley.